SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line, we welcome you to hour number three on this Friday to end out our 3 hours to round out this week up until 11 a.m. Eastern. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. A big shout out, by the way, once again to Marcus Harper II joining us here on the Early Line. We wish him the best of luck in his NFL draft process and his future in the National Football League. DRS, in this third and final hour, will continue to set the stage for the Final Four, both tonight in the women's NCAA tournament and, of course, our doubleheader of action from San Antonio on a Saturday evening as well. Our coach, James Young, JY, will join us here in the final half an hour to round out this week. But outside of college hoops, we'll also set the stage for this Friday in Major League Baseball. A huge series gets started this weekend in Philadelphia, and a little bit of NBA talk as well, handicapping some of the best games on this Friday night slate around the association. Still so much to get to in this final hour on TEL.
You know me, like I'm big into like the topics that make some sense. Like we just talked to Marcus Harper there. You know, I want to know about, right. I don't care, sometimes not the playing career, I want to know about the swag. I want to know about how we're looking, how clean we can be. And he was very forthcoming with that answer. You know what I do think is interesting? Your boy DRS is a junior. Like he's the second. Like, is there a reason behind where you can be the second or a junior? Or is it just like, what's the difference between that?
Wow, a great question. Is a junior the second?
Yeah,
because
like
you
my
go
father's
junior
name
third,
is me.
Right?
Correct, yes. Yeah. Like is
but
there
it's
a
not,
choice
it's
now
not
you can
like
make between junior,
junior, second, and third?
No.
Right?
No, like I just think it might
think
be like
so.
A way
know.
That you can just use that. Because I always thought like the swag on the uniform, like my last name Seymour, like Seymour Jr., like Deion Sanders, like Sanders Jr. on the back. Always thought that was pretty cool. And then now you have the twos back there. Like that's extra swag
two
that
looks
you
sick.
Can use that not everybody can use.
Yeah.
I like it.
Have you ever considered going as Donnie Wrightside the second?
No, like all throughout my even like my playing career, like we never had the option like put like junior on the uniform, which I would have done because again that's extra swag. But I just always find it interesting between juniors and second why you would actually go that route. Like the third, that's a great one. Like your automatically nickname is Trey, right? Like hey, it's the third, it's Trey over there. It's great, man. You get the extra swag on the naming rights. Fantastic stuff.
Imagine, though, by the way, we have a logo. If you did ever go by Donnie Wrightside II, DRS, but the S is a 2. So it's DRS2.
That's true.
But it looks pretty cool. Like, now we're talking about it.
Like
all
even
right, again,
the
producer
sort.
Extraordinaire.
Tremendous. Yeah. Like, so that'd be
tremendous.
Crazier.
The IV, that's sick.
Yeah.
All right. So here, again, our producer extraordinaire, Joe Friso, giving us all the information that we need. The difference between junior and second is that junior JR is to be used when the child is going to have the same name as his father.
Yes.
Whereas the second should be used when the child would be taking the name of a family member other than his father.
Wow. That's interesting.
Wow.
Now, that's interesting. Now, you want to get into another fight around the DRS household at this point. I mean, you know, I have one kid by design. It's a girl. But again, I've told this story before. The wife wasn't not going to let me name my child after me if it was a boy. Like, now it never came to blows because, again, we had a girl at that point. Like, come on now. Right. Like, that would have been the ultimate sign of disrespect. That's like saying, hey, you know what? The wife's not going to take your last name and or wear a wedding ring at that point. Like, I have that right up there with the disrespectfulness. Now, again, it never got to, you know, real anger because of the we had a daughter again. But, come on now. A guy's got to name his own kid whatever he wants it if it's a son. Get that out there. Put that as a PSA. Let's go.
But I think I agree, but maybe they're paying homage to another family member, and thus you get the second, right?
Like, or if she's like just telling me, like, deep down, she doesn't like my name. Yeah, like, what's up with that? You know what I mean? Come on. Like, you know, that's just a subtle knock. Like, hey, what do you think of my name? Right. Well, it's nice, but I would never name my kid that. Like, what are you talking about? What is that? Come on now.
Yeah.
Stop. Still digs at me.
I guess.
It's me in the feels.
Yeah, it really does. Did you ever hope? Did you hope that your No, I'm not gonna. Nope, not gonna ask it. Never mind. All right. Anyway, as we get ready for this Final Four weekend in the NCAA tournament, we focus on that men's tournament in our doubleheader of action tomorrow night in San Antonio. Give me two moneyline picks. Who's going to win both of our games tomorrow night inside the Alamo Dome? It was the question we asked all of you in Fade the Public. At Sports Grid on Twitter, who will win tomorrow's Final Four games? Auburn and Duke, Auburn and Houston, Florida and Duke, Florida and Houston. Of course, the RS. Duke is a 5.5 point favorite against the Cougs. Florida, a 2.5 point favorite against conference mate in Auburn. We have two teams expected to win, and that's really where the public is going. And in a pretty decisive margin, nearly 65% of the public thinking both of our favorites win outright tomorrow night in the Final Four. Duke and Florida winning and matching up in a national championship game on Monday.
Yeah, we've seen blowouts in our Fade the Public polls before, but typically, Ben, it's like just on a question that's like a yes or no or just two answers to be given. This wasn't even like a reply to an other. This was four distinctive answers given for the Final Four and an absolute smoke show by Florida and Duke, which I voted for, which I do think are the two better teams and will win that. But usually you'll get some of that, you know, pushback from the public. Now, I don't think so. Like Auburn and Duke, only 17.9%, and then roughly 8% each for Auburn and Houston and Florida and Houston. So a runaway victory for Florida and Duke, which I agree with, but I'm surprised the public is running that heavy here at about 65% in a four-way poll. That's impressive for Florida and Duke.
Yeah, it really is, DRS. And on one sense, when we talk about this being from a fade-the-public perspective, and things are so publicly chalky, do we then want to do exactly that and fade it? Do we want to pick one of the two underdogs to win outright, or maybe both? In fact, when you look at the Fade the Public poll, for both of the underdogs to win outright, Auburn and Houston, 8.4%, Florida and Houston, 8.9%. So it really does seem as though, DRS, people, and I guess it makes sense, with Duke a minus money favorite to win the national title, not trusting the Cougs, even if it is a competitive game, to knock off the Blue Devils outright. Houston has not been an underdog since the end of January, when they went into Lawrence, taking on Kansas, winning a double overtime thriller. Houston trailed by as many as 6 points with 20 seconds remaining in regulation. They forced OT. They were down by six with about 18 seconds remaining in overtime, and they forced a second OT to win inside the fog. That was the only game this year for the Cougs as an underdog. They won outright in a double overtime thriller against Kansas. Donnie, again, I think it's natural to say here, with so much public love for both of the favorites, and the favorites getting that love, you want to fade the public. But this has been a tournament defined by its chalk. Not only all four one seeds into the NCAA tournament Final Four, but of course, a lot of favorites winning in this big dance. This has been a tournament that has defined the chaos and the madness we often love the month of March for. So I do want to knock the public for just being chalky and saying both of the favorites are playing for a national championship on Monday. If there was any year, though, for it to make sense, this would be that one.
No, it would be. But also understand this, too, when you look at the poll, 65%. It's like, yeah, well, it's the two favorites. We're not talking about 16.5 and 15.5 point spreads here. We're talking about 4.5 to 5.5 and 2.5 on the opposite side. So once again, the public saying, I like the favorites who technically within a possession or two of each other. It's not as if this is a runaway easy victory to pick in this poll at this point. That's why it's so impressive that the public is really feeling Florida and Duke as the two best teams, even though, let's just say, 5 points or less in both of these games. Those are crazy close games on a neutral court after both of these teams have a week off to prepare. That's the fun part about it. So we'll see if the public, and a lot of people just like to fade the public, this is giving you great evidence that, hey, maybe at least one or both of these dogs can win. And if at least one wins on the money line, well, then there you go. You're already profitable for this weekend at the Final Four. We'll see if the public is right, which I, again, rode with the public with Florida and Duke.
Yeah, listen, I think that's the matchup as well. It's been my national championship pick, really, for the entirety of this NCAA tournament. We'll see how it plays out. Major League Baseball games to handicap next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit MyFreeStyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. A weekend in Major League Baseball, a busy weekend for DRS. We are live together tomorrow night, Sports Grid's Bracket Central, for the opening game of two in the Final Four, Florida and Auburn, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Sunday, Pro Baseball Today, live with DRS and Tom Vecchio at 10 a.m. Eastern. And DRS, there is no doubt that the series that starts today is also going to be a priority come Sunday afternoon for one of the best sets this weekend in MLB. The Philadelphia Phillies hosting the Los Angeles Dodgers. L.A. trying to start a perfect 9-0. The 8-0 beginning for the Dodgers. The best ever start by a reigning World Series champ in MLB history. But the Phil's no slouch. They're 5-1 to begin this year after sweeping the Rockies, ending out that sweep yesterday with a 3-1 win. Donnie, we expect the Dodgers to probably be a favorite in 150-plus of 162 regular season games this year. This is as close of a number to a moneyline pick'em as we have seen for the Dodgers yet. Yoshi Yamamoto and the LA Dodgers will be a slight favorite at the break, at -126, total of 8. What do you expect to see tonight in Philadelphia?
We got about 65 degree temperatures. No rain in the forecast. Rained a lot here earlier, but obviously that shouldn't be an issue tonight. Light wind blowing in from center field, 3 to 4 miles an hour, so insignificant. So should be some decent hitting weather tonight for this game that we're anticipating. That should be great. You normally look at that 8 total with a Phillies-Dodgers game in Citizens Bank Park and say, you know, what is that? Shohei Ohtani going up against Zach Wheeler at this point because how efficient and effective those offenses can be. So I normally look at that 8, and rightly so tonight. I don't care what the handicap is. You're probably leaning towards the over because every single guy in both of these lineups seem like they can do damage. And some of the numbers already take a look at. Like Yamamoto is a very good pitcher. Last year, Ben, 434 batters he faced, a 135 ISO weighted on base percentage of 272. Fantastic. To open the season, again, only one start, 22 batters faced. Lefties he's been really good against. Righties have been getting the best of them. And look at the Philadelphia Phillies. Most of their players around 10 to 12 at-bats against right-handed pitching. Elevated ISO power numbers on 7 of the 9 starters anticipated tonight. But when you take a look at for the Dodgers, like Lizardo's one of those guys that if the Phillies got it right with this trade and he was anywhere near as effective as he was in his first start, what a fantastic move for the Philadelphia Phillies. But you also take a look at that lineup where last year, Lizardo injured at times, not performing all that effectively, left-handed pitcher, not even getting left-handed batters out. But now you have a lefty going up against the Dodgers. I haven't seen a lot of lefties this year. And outside of Betts, Edmund, and Teoscar Hernandez, they haven't hit lefties all that well. Do I lean towards the Philadelphia Phillies tonight as a home dog of the ballpark? Yes. Phillies are good. Dodgers are unbeaten. But if you're just looking to take a flyer in this game, boy, it's hard to take the under with these two offenses in that ballpark here. Yeah. Each one around 4 runs sounds about right in this one. We'll play it out. I'll lean towards the Phillies getting the +114 slight plus money and a slight lean towards the over. But betting purposes for me tonight, will I have any wagers?
Yeah.
Probably not in this one, to be honest.
DRS, should be a pretty lovely evening in early spring on this Friday night up and down the East Coast, even in the afternoon. And we've got a lot of home debuts across Major League Baseball today, as we will share in just a little bit. Not for Philadelphia. They have already been home this year. But like we will see today inside the friendly confines. Of course, that is not on the East Coast, but in the Midwest, we go to Wrigley Field in Chicago, Illinois. The Dodgers off to an 8-0 start. The Padres not tailing all that far behind. A perfect 7-0. They visit the Cubbies in Chicago's home opener at Wrigley. Shota Imanaga gets the start for the Cubs. -164 on that money line. DRS total is not 7 anymore. It's now 6.5. That can only mean the wind is blowing in at the friendly confines, huh?
Yeah, legitimate chances today where a winless team in the Atlanta Braves we'll talk about will probably get their win today. And also two teams on the road, the Dodgers and the Padres. The Padres, heavy underdogs in this game, as we just saw in that graphic. And we saw the Dodgers as a slight favorite over the Philadelphia Phillies. But you're right about that. 47 degrees in Chicago, wind blowing in at about double digits. Not exactly the best hitting environment. But if there was a way to attack, it's probably not going to be with the Cubs pitcher on the mound. It probably is going to be Vasquez here for the San Diego Padres. Last year, 434 total batters he faced. A 169 ISO, which is right on average, which isn't bad, but a slightly higher weighted on base percentage at 360, which included to left-handed batters who really got the best of Vasquez. So if I'm looking to attack the lineup tonight, and if I do want to have a, let's just say, a couple of hitter props in there, Hap would be a switch hitter out of the leadoff spot, hold bat lefty tonight. Kyle Tucker's been on fire, hold bat lefty there. You take a look at Michael Bush in the middle of the lineup, Pete Crow Armstrong. There are some lefties in the lineup, which is the way I would attack. But again, 47 degrees, that's already cold. Some wind chills, what, in the low 40s, wind blowing in, it's Wrigley. That's usually a great hitting environment, but maybe not tonight. I do agree the Cubs could be the favorite, but it's just hard, man. When you are playing early April games in cold, windy conditions, it's not always the best feeling here for the batters. But again, look at the lefties for the Cubs if you want to try to make some money in that game tonight.
Yeah, DRS, not exactly a true feeling of spring in the Windy City, and yet the home debut, of course, at the friendly confines. The Atlanta Braves off to a winless 0-7 start, as we have shared. The Braves, no team has ever started 0-7 in Major League Baseball postseason, but now the playoffs are expanded, and Atlanta entered the year with the second-best price to win the National League pennant. Not during the day, but at least the home debut in the A for the Braves as they host the Miami Marlins. Spencer Schwellenbach gets the start for Atlanta, minus 245 on that money line against the Miami Marlins. The odds makers expect Atlanta to pick up its first victory of the year. Does Donnie Wrightside agree?
Yeah, a little home cooking. We talked about some of these cooler temperatures in the East Coast here and certainly in the Windy City of Chicago. Warmer temperatures in the Big A tonight, 79 degrees at first pitch. There is a slight wind blowing in from right field, about 6 to 7 miles an hour. Shouldn't have much of an impact, but this is one of those games you look at. Do you want to lay to minus 245? Probably not. Do I think the Braves do win this game? Absolutely. I'd look more, and I'm not a run line guy, but -1.5 runs here. Max Meyer last night, talented young pitcher, struggled last year through his 250 batters, struggled in his first start against right-handed batters. If there is a game that the Braves sort of circle the wagons and say, this has to be a win, or we might not win a single game the rest of the season, as I'm being facetious, this looks like the night where the Braves fly to victory. Bats come alive, 6-1, 6-2 final. That's what I'm looking at tonight down in the Big A for the Braves.
A lot of home openers today in Detroit, in Boston at Fenway, at Citi Field for the New York Mets. The Pittsburgh Pirates will host the Yankees in the first game this year inside PNC Park. A really good day of baseball, 14 games on that MLB card. NBA action up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
As we get you ready for a weekend all around sports, a really good Friday night slate in the association as well. Just over a week remains in this NBA regular season. Most teams, about five games remaining to end out the long grind that is an 82-game regular season. Pretty jam-packed slate, DRS, on this Friday, including a matchup of the two top teams in the Western Conference, the Oklahoma City Thunder, who have now won 11 consecutive games, covering in all 11 victories, head to Houston to take on the Rockets. Houston, still three games clear of everybody else in the Western Conference for that two seed in the Western Conference postseason. 6.5-point spread in favor of the Thunder. Total stands at 228.5. Will OKC continue its win streak, getting to 12? Might the Rockets play spoiler, improve something down the stretch of this regular season?
Yeah, one of those measuring stick games that you take a look at for the Houston Rockets. No real moral victories as they want to stay in the number two seed, which means they want to win as many basketball games as they can. But at the same time, OKC knows they get the best punch from everybody in the NBA. Why? Because they have the best record in the NBA and looking to win their first championship. If we take a look at some of the lines, opened up at 6 here at the FanDuel Sportsbook, now currently sitting at 6.5. Some other outlets as low as 5.5. So we're not exactly getting a pushover game that's saying it's going to be an easy victory for the Thunder. Anticipated starting lineups, SGA NBA, Wallace, Dort, Williams, and Holmgren for the OKC Thunder, and then for the Rockets, Van Vliet, Thompson, Eason, and Şengün. For me, I usually like these step-up spots for the Rockets, but this late in the season, yeah. I don't want to think, hey, we'll show you we can beat you. I just look at the most red-hot team, best team in the NBA. They're not laying down for anybody, particularly the number two overseas Rockets. Give me a double-digit Friday night victory on the road for OKC in yeah. H-Town.
DRS, I think it's really difficult to go against Oklahoma City right now. Again, 11 consecutive wins, a cover in all of those 11 victories. Five times as a double-digit favorite. Here, they're only laying 6.5. The Rockets have that second-best record in the Western Conference. Three-game advantage with only about 5-6 games remaining in this regular season. They should be the 2 seed, and yet it's a 35-1 price on Houston to win the Western Conference crown. 12-9-1 against the spread this year for the Rockets as a dog. 8 of those 12 in outright victory. Again, Houston hasn't been booked as an underdog all that often this year. It should prove the Rockets can hold their own water. And yet the odds makers not really expecting that. Golden State has been absolutely lights out. When the starting five looks like it did last night, that includes Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, Brandon Podziemski, and Moses Moody. But the second leg of a back-to-back, still in the same state, but last night they were in L.A. Tonight they return to San Francisco. It's basically a pick-em price for the Warriors and the Nuggets. Minus 116 on the money line for Golden State. Over-under stands at 235. What do you see tonight by the Bay?
Yeah, it's interesting because we take a look at the line, opened up at -1.5 as a favorite last night for the Golden State Warriors and still sits at -1 at the FanDuel Sportsbook. Some other outlets still holding the 1.5. But also, before the show started, we were getting the Denver Nuggets as a 1-point favorite at some outlets, which is no longer the case. You look at the total, 234 up to 235. And again, it's not a huge trap. It's not as if Golden State got on a plane and went to Madison Square Garden or Milwaukee or something like that. You're staying in the same state here, private jet up north. So expected starting lineups, Curry, Podziemski, Moody, Butler, and Green. And also understand this, you're playing for seeding. So on maybe a January night, maybe some of the Golden State Warriors would sit this one out, but not the case. And the Nuggets certainly need this game as well. I'm just going to lean on, Nuggets waiting on the Golden State Warriors, rested and ready in a pick'em game. I'll take the Nuggets tonight in that spot.
DRS, this should be a victory for Golden State, or at least we should see a game at full strength between both sides. Of course, Denver losing in the double overtime thriller, that Nikola Jokic had a 60-point triple-double earlier in the week, that nobody really played in the second leg of a back-to-back. But at altitude against San Antonio, even booked as a slight favorite, the Nuggets dropped that game. Denver right now, half game in front of the Lakers for the 3 spot. L.A. in the 4. Only a game in front of Golden State. The Warriors could catch the Lakers and host an opening round playoff series. How about the other L.A. team, that being the Clippers? L.A. in action tonight at home, taking on the Dallas Mavericks, two play-in tourney teams at this moment, but a double-digit spread in favor of the Clippers. Will it be L.A. in overwhelming fashion tonight?
It looks like it's probably going to be. Look at the opening line at 8.5. You see the graphic at 9.5. Currently on FanDuel right now, it sits at 10. Other outlets as high as 10.5. Total up slightly to 225.5. But for me, I just look at that starting lineup. Give me the big three. Harden, Powell, Leonard involved in that game. Double-digit victory for me for the Clippers at home in their nice little dome, Intuit Dome.
The Clippers have been playing great balls of late. They've won 8 of their last 10. They're only a half game out of getting through the play-in tournament and being in the playoffs right away. Our coach is next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We get you ready for Final Four weekend in the men's and women's NCAA tournament to end out our 3 hours together on this Friday on the early line on Sports Grid. To do just that, it's our coach, James Young JY, joining us here on this Friday morning. We will go game by game in the Final Four on a Saturday night in San Antonio, and then we'll take a look to end out these 3 hours and this week on TEL at the Women's Big Dance and a Final Four on this Friday night in Tampa, Florida. JY, we appreciate the time. Thank you for being here in this big spot ahead of a huge weekend in college hoops.
What better way to end up the college basketball season with my two good friends, talking college hoops.
JY will be live tomorrow night for the nightcap between Duke and Houston, starting around 9 p.m. Eastern time, along with Kevin Walsh on Sports Grid's Bracket Central. DRS and myself will pass the baton to JY and K-Dubs for that second game. We will be live starting at 6 p.m. Eastern time as Sports Grid's Bracket Central coverage begins on Final Four Saturday night. JY, let's begin with the opening game of two tomorrow night in the Alamo Dome. Florida, a 2.5-point favorite against SEC in the Auburn Tigers. Despite being the number one overall seed in the Big Dance, the Tigers an underdog. 2.5-point spread in favor of the Gators. The over-under stands at 159.5. As you peer through your scouting report, getting ready for this game, to you, what's the biggest matchup that will dictate the outcome?
It's really, it's how much can Janiah Broom carry Auburn? You watch it, and obviously, you know, Donnie being on with K-Dub during the Elite Eight after you and I, Ben, got off the air. You saw Janiah Broom when he came out of the game first half, and obviously, you know, when he got injured, you saw a completely different team in Auburn. So to me, the play of Janiah Broom is going to be the X factor here in this matchup. How much can he carry an Auburn team to a possible win in an upset, even though they're the overall number one seed? Why are they an underdog? Simply put, 90-81 win by Florida earlier during the year, at Auburn, a Florida team that's played, in my opinion, much better basketball over the last 2 months of the year, and an Auburn team that is more, I would say, offensively diverse in the ways that they can attack you. Now, both teams are outstanding. Obviously, Ben, both top 10 in adjusted efficiency offensively and defensively. They can beat you in different styles. But the first team All-American, Janiah Broom, is really going to decide what happens. How much does he score and lead this team? Right. And on the flip side, how much does Todd Golden take him away from Auburn?
We'll take a look at player props, Coach, here in just a moment. But if we are lining up this Florida-Auburn game, that opening number at the FanDuel Sportsbook here in New Jersey, 161.5, now down to 159.5. Again, playing in a football stadium dome, first game of the Final Four. How are we approaching the tempo in this game? The tempo in this game, and also, does that equate to an over or an under in your mind?
Well, if you look at both teams, Florida a little bit faster offensive possession length, about 43. I think Auburn was about 140, right? Middle of the road defensively. You're right. First game. Now, the only difference you're going to have here, DRS, is you're going to probably, I think most of these teams probably got to San Antonio, I would say, by Tuesday, right? So that would mean Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Probably have 3 days of practice. They should be adjusted to the sight line, so it shouldn't be as bad as before. Remember, 90-81 game, 171 points, first time out. I think both teams are going to want to try and score. Both teams can shoot the ball, have depth. Obviously, neither team really turns the ball over as much, so the shots should get up to the rim. Let it keep coming down with that full game. I actually think this game is going to be the one that goes over.
159.5, that total at this moment. JY, let's talk about those players, of course, on the most significant of stages on a Final Four Saturday in San Antonio. Let's start with Janiah Broom, who has a points prop of 19.5 for Auburn. He had 25-14 in the Elite Eight win, that South Regional Final against Michigan State on Sunday, despite exiting the game for about 5 minutes of game time with a right elbow injury. Janiah Broom asked about his status, getting ready for the Final Four, saying he feels good, should be very close to 100%, no restrictions for the matchup. DRS a little bit more skeptical. How healthy, how effective do you think Janiah Broom is going to be? Do you have any reservations about his performance entering the Final Four?
Listen, everybody's banged up this time. It's just a matter of, do you get banged up and hurt where everybody is seated or not? And let's be honest, Ben, when you get to this point of the season, I've been there, well, not to the Final Four, nowhere close, but getting up to tournament time, you do have guys that sit out and practice and just walk through the stuff that they need to walk through. So interesting prop with Janiah Broom at, you know, obviously 19.5, only 18 in the first matchup versus Florida, but got 19 shots up. I think if this game is going to be close, Ben, he's got to clear 20. If he gets 15, 16 points, I don't see how Auburn is even in this game, to be honest with you. So for that, and thinking that the game is close, even though I like Florida, I'm going to go over to 19.5 for Jahni Broome. I think he'll be able to carry enough of them to keep this to be a good matchup.
Let's say we take Jahni Broome out of the equation here. Let's just say Florida's really locking him down, and maybe that elbow isn't right. If I gave you one player on the Auburn Tigers that you're going to tell the public to look forward to, maybe a betting prop or so, who's the guy that steps it up for the Auburn Tigers?
Well, you got to look at someone like Pettiford. You got to look at someone from the guard spot, because what's going to probably happen is if you go and you kind of take a look at what you may do, you may try and take away some other players, right? So you look at Pettiford, his points prop, looking at about 14.5, come off the bench, dynamo, big-time shooter, guard, not afraid to take the moment. So to me, that's someone you could look at. He shoots the ball at about 38% from three. So if you want to look at probably Pettiford in regards to maybe three-point props, double team, kick out, he's going to get the looks. Maybe that's where you look. That's where I look for a guard, somebody can knock down shots from the perimeter.
Let's go to the other side for the Florida Gators. Highest points prop in the game, JY, of course, is the magnificent Walter Clayton Jr. at 20.5. If the Gators are going to play in the national championship game on Monday, what does Todd Golden's team need from a point production level out of Walter Clayton Jr.?
He's going to need somewhere in that number, and I think this number is going to be really close. I think the way to look at Walter Clayton Jr. is probably the assist, because I think Florida has been a little bit more offensive balance. You look at that 90-81 game they had earlier in the year, 19 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds, kind of that junkyard dog. So if you either want to go assist or assist plus rebounds, that's where I would look. The guy I'm looking at, and you know I did it with you, and I always say his name wrong, Thomas Hout, the center. Okay, this guy may play bigger minutes because of the fact that Condon has been hurt. Obviously, we talked about that, Ben, when he got hurt two Thursday nights ago in the Sweet 16. This is a guy that's shooting the ball from three well, 35% from three, has a three-pointer in 7 out of his last 10 games, 1 of 4 versus Auburn earlier in the year. Thomas Hout, 1 made 3, minus 154. Maybe parlay that with a Florida money line and you get yourself the plus money.
Makes some sense in that, because I do like that as well. You give that guy the open shot, he's going to take it. You just need one look at that, and if it goes down, you're winning better in that equation. If we are taking a look at that early game that these two played, obviously on the road, Florida picked up a big victory. Mm-hmm. But now you take a look at this game playing on a neutral site. Are there any advantages for either one of these teams or the style of play, coach? Because, again, I can't get enough where you go from the NBA, NCAA arenas into these larger football stadiums. That first half, are you going to panic anywhere? What do you want to see early from each one of these two teams?
I mean, if you want to wait and see if it gets off to a slow start to kind of figure it out, that's probably it. The good thing about both of these teams is both teams are top 50% in offensive rebounding percentage. So to me, watch the board game early on, right? Do either team's bigs get into foul trouble? And who dominates the offensive glass? Because I think that's when it becomes key, Donnie, in games of big arenas. Mm-hmm. Who secures that offensive rebound for a second or third opportunity to get a score?
Yep.
A lot of similarities between these two teams. Conference foes, only one regular season matchup. As both JY and DRS said, Florida going to Auburn and winning outright as a double-digit dog. Also, Todd Golden's second ever coaching gig under Bruce Pearl at Auburn. They know each other very, very well. The nightcap on Saturday, Duke and Houston next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Our nightcap on Final Four Saturday in San Antonio. Duke and Houston. JY, our coach James Young back with us for a second consecutive segment for the remainder of the early line here on this Friday. And JY, we broke down the first game between Auburn and Florida, the all-SEC showdown in the opening game of two in San Antonio. The nightcap is as good as you could hope for. Duke, a 5.5-point favorite against Houston. Total slightly on its way up to 136.5, but still a rather minimal number for a college basketball contest. I asked you, what is the biggest matchup that will determine the outcome between Auburn and Florida? A similar question here between the Cougs and the Blue Devils. Who do you give the edge in this game as they face off tomorrow night in San Antonio?
A lot of this, Ben, is going to be predicated on the officials. And I want people to understand this. Houston is not going to win this game if they're going to win it, but they're not going to win it pretty. Right? It's not going to be a style contest for Houston. They have to be able to use their girth, their age, their maturity, and their physicalness versus a team like Duke. Duke has not seen a team like this all year. But on the flip side, neither has Houston. So it's going to come down, honestly, Ben, to the referees and how this game is officiated. We did the game, obviously, on Sunday, and we saw how, you know, against Tennessee, when you let Houston play physical and play their style, they're going to lock you up. But if you start calling fouls on them, you're going to get them in foul trouble. So I think the main thing to watch is the officiating crew, how the game is called. It should be consistent throughout. I always used to tell my players, first 4 or 5 minutes, you got to figure out how this game is called. The more physical this game is called, the more it benefits Houston, the less they allow it, it benefits Duke. And also, Ben, I think that impacts the over-under in the game as well.
How about the impact on the over-under, Coach, when we just take a look at Houston actually has played 2 games in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight in a football stadium at Lucas Oil in Indianapolis. Now you travel down to San Antonio, another football stadium. Is that an advantage for Houston that we should play into, or just more of the eye candy, like, don't worry about that?
Well, I think it comes down to the ability to rebound. Now, I think that's the key here with the physicality. If Francis, if Roberts, if Tugler, these guys can stay out of foul trouble, that's going to be important for Houston because I think they're going to put pressure on Maliwat and obviously Cooper Flagg and some of the others with Duke. So to me, there's where a key component is. And if you want to talk about like one-on-one matchup, it's Flagg versus Roberts. That is the matchup. That is the matchup. There's no, I don't care what anybody says, that's the matchup that matters. Because if Juwan Robertson stay out of foul trouble and make it physical with Cooper, that's going to be different. Now, if I'm Kelvin Sampson, I'm running a second guy. I'm trying to take away sight lines. If I'm Cooper Flagg, I'm trying to go to the cup and use my athleticism. But that is the matchup right there, right at the 4 spot. Can Juwan Roberts do enough to make it difficult for Cooper Flagg? If he does, the better he does, the better chance Houston wins. And that long goes with that under as well.
So let's talk about the prop profile then, of course, for Cooper Flagg, the biggest star in college basketball, the presumed number one overall pick this summer in the 2025 NBA draft, the favorite to win the most outstanding player at this weekend's Final Four as well. 18.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists. JY, in those numbers and in the performance you anticipate out of Cooper Flagg, the freshman on this huge stage in the Final Four, where do you think Flagg is able to excel?
It's going to be in the rebounds and the assists, because I don't know if they're going to let this, they're not going to let this kid go off. Like, I just don't see that happening. Because if you think about the, if I think the game's going under, Ben, and it's 136, and say I think it's 130. Let's say Duke wins and they get 65 points. I'm depending on almost a third of the scoring to come from one guy. I don't think that's going to happen. I think if I'm Kelvin Sampson, I'm making him distribute and make other guys beat me, particularly at the three-point line, and use where my guards are effective, where Cryer, Sharp, you know, Uzan, defensively in regards to that matter. So to me, I'm looking under for the points prop with Flagg, looking more to the rebound than assists go over, make someone else beat me.
If we take Flagg out of the equation, let's just say the next guy's to step up, because, Coach, I'm with you. Like, we have enough data on both of these ball clubs to understand the way they want to play. Both really good on offense. Both can knock down the three-point shot and play great defense. But the one thing I always find interesting is Houston will defend the three-point shot, but they'll let you shoot the three-point shot. When you take a look at Con Knipple from the three-point line and also Tyrese Proctor, is there a secondary option on the Duke Blue Devils that you would lean towards going with if you're looking, let's just say, at threes made or points, opposed to just going with Cooper Flagg?
And I think that's where the key thing is. I think the three-point line is going to be where you're going to make their mark. And I think that's where you have to look at, obviously, threes made. Now, if you try and look at the market right now, Knipple is plus 182 for three-plus made threes. And obviously, Proctor's at plus 130. I think Proctor's going to get a little bit more attempts. I wonder if Knipple could struggle with the physicality in regards to how they're being guarded, even though Colin Knipple has gotten so much better off the bounce. I think they run him off the three-point line of anything because he's Duke's best shooter. I like Proctor at plus 130 if you go one way. And on the flip side, Emmanuel Sharp. Ben and I watched that game. If there's a big shot guy that's not going to be afraid the moment, and it doesn't matter if he's making or missing, it's Emmanuel Sharp. So if you want to look at three-point props, right now on FanDuel, they have it as 2+, 3+. They don't have it at over-under. I would look at Emmanuel Sharp, 3+ made threes at plus 120. I'll look at Tyrese Proctor, 3+ made threes at plus 130 if I go with the three-point props.
A lot of guys for Houston, J.Y., that can fill it up. A lot of guys for the Cougs that were there for the Sweet 16 loss to these Blue Devils exactly a tournament ago. Is it Emmanuel Sharp from deep? Is it L.J. Cryer doing everything? Is it Milos Juzan providing that spark as well? Offensively, who has the best night for Houston in the Final Four?
To me, it's Emmanuel Sharp because I think his ability to knock down shots. Juzan will be comfortable distributing, and if I'm Duke, I'm loading up on Cryer when he especially goes off the bounce. It's Emmanuel Sharp. He is the difference maker, and that's why I think they cover the spread, and I think they actually steal the game.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be Houston outright. Wow. J.Y., say goodbye to Donnie right side. We got to let him go to the money line. We'll all see each other tomorrow in studio. DRS.
Lefty?
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A Final Four Saturday in San Antonio. That's tomorrow in the men's NCAA tournament. Tonight, it is Final Four Friday in Tampa in the women's big dance. And our coach, James Young, J.Y., still here for this final segment on a Friday and this week on the early line to get you set for our two matchups tonight. J.Y., much like in the men's big dance, the first matchup of the Final Four in the women's NCAA tourney, an all-SEC affair. South Carolina, the reigning champs, hoping for their third national championship in the last 4 years, take on a Texas team that did the unthinkable earlier in the regular season. In Austin, Madison Booker and the Longhorns beat South Carolina outright as a slight home underdog, snapping South Carolina's 57-game win streak in SEC play. The Gamecocks did get their revenge, winning the SEC tournament title game against Texas as well. Now they face off with a spot in a national championship game on the line. 4.5-point spread in favor of South Carolina. A total at 124.5. How do you break down the matchup between the Longhorns and the Gamecocks?
You know, this is obviously round three between these two. And, Ben, when you really think about it, since that loss to UConn where, you know, they lost their home winning streak, South Carolina has been absolutely bludgeoning teams. And that includes a 64-45 win over Texas in the SEC final. And they've been drilling teams, even a tournament, although that game got a little quirky at times with Indiana and with Maryland and, of course, with Duke. I think this familiarity, I look at this team in South Carolina, I think they're bigger, I think they're deeper, and they've been there before, although Vic Schaefer is one hell of a coach that's been around for a long, long time. Because of those advantages, I'm willing to lay the 4.5 versus South Carolina. I think they're the better team and should set up for a monumental, probably championship matchup where they look to exact revenge.
J.Y., when you think about South Carolina, they have struggled so far in the big dance. They have not covered in any of their last three wins in terms of the pregame spread. And in the second weekend, they were trailing against Maryland late in the fourth quarter. It was a tied game with about 2.5 minutes remaining against the Duke Blue Devils in the Elite Eight. A really interesting matchup tonight between familiar foes. Fourth game this year between the Longhorns and the Gamecocks. Our nightcap in Tampa. It is UCLA, the number one overall seed, and yet a 7.5-point underdog against Gino Auriemma, Paige Beckers, and UConn. The Huskies, a minus money favorite to win the national championship and a 7.5-point favorite in the Final Four. Will this game, J.Y., be more competitive than the odds makers expect, or will Connecticut, who has won 14 consecutive games by at least 14 points, continue to steamroll the opposition?
And really quick, before we get to that, Malaysia Fuwaili over 12.5 points. Remember, folks, she gets 20-plus minutes. She's 14-4 to go over that number. Should be able to get there 2 of 10 in the SEC final when she did not get that versus Texas. Now, on to this game. They've looked really good. Now, the problem with UConn is that sometimes they start slow. So I would not blame you if you waited this out. I did this when we were with Ben and I did it together last weekend. They were, I think, down or up. Down three. I took a -7.5. They beat Oklahoma by like 30. So I wouldn't mind you waiting this out a little bit, but I will let his 7.5 points. And here's the thing. Naismith coaching or Corey Close, although I disagree that she got it, I'm going to look at how she's going to defend. And how I would defend her, I ain't letting Paige go off. So where I would look, Paige Bueckers over 4.5 assists, over 7 of her last 12 games, and that's the way I do it. Remember, 2 games she missed by the hook. You got to make other people beat you. The problem is with Chen, with Fudd, with Strong, they have enough other players to do it as well. UConn minus the points, Paige over 4.5 assists.
Paige Bueckers, 34 points in the round of 32 win against South Dakota State, 40 in the Sweet 16 against Oklahoma, 31 on Monday night against USC. JY, when all is said and done, at the end of this weekend in the women's NCAA tournament on Sunday evening, who calls home a national champion?
I've said it, Ben. You notice for the better part of 2 months, I think UConn is the best team. Paige is playing her best basketball since her freshman year. I keep feeling in some crazy mind that this is Geno's swan song, and what better way to send out the greatest coach in women's basketball history, although my old friend Kamiko Williams played for Pat Summit would disagree with that. I would say this. They win it. Geno hangs it up after the season.
Oh, now that would be something. And if you have that breaking news to report, you better stink and do it. JY, I'll see you tomorrow night as we get ready for Sports Grid's Bracket Central coverage. Although we will not be working together, of course, we'll cross paths in studio.
Right up.
The early line back on Monday, 8 a.m. Eastern. Have a great weekend.